So before I start, you want to take your minute? Okay, all right. Let me stop a little bit. Hi, everybody. I'm Eric with a K. Oh, mic here. It's got a life of its own. All right. Let me just start by saying thank you to our speaker tonight. When I think of Tom, I think, you know, he's probably the best example in my life of pure courage. Mm-hmm. That man faces fear in a way that is I just want to be like that when I grow up. And he's an amazing man. I love him. Brett, I'm glad you're in my life, man. When I was asked to talk tonight, you know, I was asked to talk on the topic of sponsorship. I want to thank the leaders for asking me to basically participate in my own recovery. Thank you for that kind invitation. It's not easy to be able to talk like this in front of you because you're my family. You're my own group. You guys have known me over the years. You know if I'm going to lie to you. Yeah, I can't. I just have to tell the truth, right? I can't spin anything. I just have to really just be honest and straight. And I appreciate that. And when I think about what has happened in my life as the result of sponsors that have given me their time freely, I'm welled, actually, with a feeling of gratitude that is sometimes difficult for me to express because my heart just gets huge. For me to trust a man generally, I couldn't have done that at all if it wasn't for these offsites that happened. So I remember when I first came into Al-Anon, I went to a Sunday meeting in Burbank. It was a sort of mixed group. One of my sponsors says, "Eric, that's the scene of the crime." And you know, like where you turn yourself in and say, "Yeah, I'm powerless too," you know. And I remember being there, and there was a lot of women in the group, which is fine. There's a sprinkling of men, and they said, "Oh, have you been to the Thursday night men's meeting in La Cañada?" At seven o'clock, let's rock, people. And I was like, no. And they said, yeah, you should probably go to that. And I remember coming, and you guys were such a powerful group at the time that I came for my first visit that I couldn't handle it. And so I left Al-Anon for about 3 months to see if I could make a go at living again, just on my own terms. And of course, I came back on my hands and knees because I couldn't. And when I made my way back to Thursday night, I started to hear what you men had to say when you were sharing generally. And I picked up on this pretty quickly. It's like, you go to that Thursday night meeting and you hear them talk about sponsorship. You hear them talk about doing step work. That's a major tradition that we have with our group. And I think that's an awesome thing that we provide. And so I went through, I remember like I just couldn't imagine doing any sponsorship or really opening up and talking to people, but I did like coming, I started to like the feeling that I was getting when I would come to those Thursday night meetings. And then you guys said, well, there's this offsite thing that we do. And I said, well, what is that like? And they said, well, you know, it's a lot like these Thursday night meetings. And I thought, okay, perfect, great, awesome. Okay, I could do that, I think. And so somebody said, well, here, come and drive with me and let's go on up. And so I get up here and Friday night goes swimmingly fine. And then I go into some strange room. My roommate is Jack C. He has x-ray vision and can see everything that's going on in my life, even though I'm trying to conceal and hide it all from him. And he was very gracious and didn't say much, just welcomed me like he's good at doing. And Today, he's my sponsor. The loop and the hoops I went through to arrive at him being my sponsor today is a part of the story I want to talk about today. That Saturday morning when I got up, I went and had a sort of fourth-step workshop. And I remember they partnered us out into different little smaller groups. And we all were supposed to share something terrible that was going on that we were going through. And the rest of the group were supposed to kind of sponsor us back, right, like respond back to us. And I told them what was going on. And one of the guys says, "Well, you're pretty fucked up." And what it did was just a massive flashback to, like, oh my God, I just opened myself up here. I was vulnerable for a minute. And I got to stop this business right now, this second. I can't keep doing this. But it was like, somebody, I don't have a car to get out of here. There's no Uber, there's none of that stuff yet. And I was like, how do I get through this? And so I tried to get through it with my old tools, which was, okay, I'm just going to go into the bedroom and try and sleep. Well, I forgot Jack C is my fucking sponsor, and he's got like x-ray vision. And so I get in there and he sees this pile of blankets and some things underneath it moving around, and he goes, wait a minute, there's a person there. So he talks to me, and he could see, you know, I'm going, my head's caving in, he can see it. And he says, "What's going on?" And I just could not speak. I could not open up. I couldn't let anyone else hurt me like that. Comment had hurt me that day. And he said to me, he goes, you know, if you don't tell us what's going on, we can't help you. So please, whenever you're ready, just, we're here for you. And then he left me alone, and I thought, oh, finally. I can try and just sleep my way through this whole rest of the weekend. And there was a kind of a darkness and a depression that just sifted in like a massive, like, black cloud just came in, and I found that I couldn't sleep. That wasn't working for me. And so I thought, okay, fine. The words that Jack had said to me, reached the core. I knew I had to talk. But I knew my dilemma. It was like, if I fucking open up to these bastards and they hurt me again, I'm done. Completely. I'm done. And it's like, okay, I can't really go back to the way I was, holding everything in and just pretending like everything's fine. I can't keep doing that, but I don't know that I can trust and survive being vulnerable with all these strange men that I don't really know. And so I went to the 1 o'clock, you know, meeting, and in it, and they finally, like, got around to throwing one of those cards that was mine, where, you know, they used to do that. And it was like, something in me snapped that day. I shifted, I took a risk. I don't know why I did that. And the words that came out of my mouth was, "I hate every fucking son of a bitch and one of you bastards in this room today, because you're making me open up and talk about the stuff that I am absolutely the most ashamed of. And I don't know that I can trust any of you. You fucking bastards, like, I hate you, and here's why. When I was a kid, my dad didn't deal so well with my mom leaving him. And he'd go through fits of rage. And I remember there was a period of time where his rage knew no bounds, pretty much for a period of about 4 years. And every time he would come home from work, it seemed like his rage had no freaking end. And I come from a big family, so there's a lot of my brothers and sisters around. And he'd rage and beat on all of us over and over and over again. And one night, my chore was to clean the kitchen. And, you know, that day I was just exhausted. Now, I knew I would get my ass kicked if I didn't clean it, but I was too exhausted to get in there and actually do it. And so I went and I took a nap, And I just didn't get up, and it was about 11. And my dad walks into the kitchen and he sees the absolute chaos that's in there. You know, when our family would eat, there would be like all of the dishes would be dirty. And I remember that night I put a bunch in the sink, you know, and there's just trying to make it easier on me because it was just so fucking hard to deal with that house with all the fighting that was going on all the time. It seemed like, you know, like my dad only really ever had, it seemed, two emotions. He was either angry or he was not angry. Two-note chorus. That was it. And, you know, we're all walking on thin shells, you know, because he's dealing with basically losing the love of his life, his higher power, so to speak. And I ended up, being dragged out of my bed by the hair, out of the middle of a sleep, so I didn't know what was going on. And he dragged me up the stairs into that kitchen, and he began to just flicked on the lights, and he started just freaking right out, screaming. And he started saying things like, you know, you fucking kids are animals. You're sons of bitch and filthy fucking animals. These dishes, look at these dishes. They're fucking disgusting. You don't deserve to eat off of dishes. And so he starts taking everything that was on the plates and in the sinks, and he just lifts it over his head over and over again, smashing this onto the ground until the ground's completely covered in bits and shards of like the broken porcelain and glass and all of that. And of course, it's very wet now because he's pulled stuff right out of the kitchen sink. And I'm like sitting over at the door and I'm watching this and I'm like thinking, maybe tonight's the night he kills me. Because I wondered if he wanted me dead. I felt like a burden to that guy. That was never good enough. Because he always found fault with everything that ever happened. It was never good enough. And I know now that that's how he felt when his marriage failed, and that was just pushing that on to all his kids. He didn't know any better. And I was sitting there in that scenario thinking that for sure he was going to kill me because I knew his rage wasn't over. There was more to come. He was just warming up. And so he reached over to me and he just sort of grabbed me. And I'm only about 12. I'm a little skinny thing at 12. And he starts, you know, raggling me around like a rag doll. And of course he loses his balance on the slippery floor. And as we both go down, he pins me underneath him so he doesn't get carved up by all that broken glass and shit. I pulled glass and barbs out of my arms and my knees for about 4 weeks after that. But when he finally got up, the shame that he felt that overcame him allowed him only energy to say one last thing to me before he left that room. And the last words he said to me was, "Now clean up this fucking mess that you made." And when, after that night, I mean, I cleaned that place so clean, so spick and span, so perfectly. Because I thought, you know, like if I don't, maybe I die. Maybe I get kicked out. Maybe somebody takes me out of this scenario. I couldn't imagine not being with my family. So I love my brothers and sisters. It was very much a survival mode that we were in. And, you know, I'd say my dad was alcoholic, but he's not. His father was alcoholic. And my dad just learned all his alcoholic type behavior from his dad. And I learned all my best alcoholic tricks from my dad. So, you know, I'm basically an adult grandchild of an alcoholic who's carrying a disease that has been descending and growing and building for, you know, after I did some genealogy, I actually discovered that it was 9 generations. Just go back to the, you know, Declaration of Independence of America, and that gives you some sense of how far back 9 generations is. And I told the guys in this meeting all that story. Of course, I did it in 3 minutes, not 10 minutes like now. But it was like, and when I was done, I was like, I figured you guys hated my guts. And you didn't want to have anything to do with me. And what you did completely transformed my life forever. people started like jumping up onto their feet and going, "Woo-hoo! That's the best goddamn share we've heard at this offside all weekend." And I mean, I had people coming up to me and saying, like, "You're my number one favorite Canadian in all the world. You just like showed us how to be more vulnerable than we think we've ever seen in a little while. Wow. Thank you. Please keep coming back. We love you." And I was like, I left, you know, that offside like going, I don't know if I ever want to do that again, but that was pretty cool. And after that weekend, I learned that there are some men in this world that you do not need to fear. And I also, I had this troubling feeling inside of me that had been with me ever since I was a little boy. And the feeling was, why would any woman ever want to love a man like me? Men are pathetic, weak, and losers. They're on, what's to love about them? And that weekend, I got my answer. When you meet a loving man, that's one of the greatest experiences that you can have. Because a man's love is beautiful. It is incredible. And after doing that, you know, that weekend, I felt like I was kind of, it's weird, it's like supercharged or something. And so I went off, and when I came back to the Thursday meeting afterwards, you know, that first Thursday afterwards, I remember coming in, and it wasn't a group of strangers anymore. These are people that kind of knew me and understood me. And the love and respect that was given to me was just incredible. And I couldn't not live without that after having had that experience. And you know, you guys started to give your examples of like what it was like to find freedom from, you know, the bitterness and resentment that you'd harbored over the people that just weren't acting right. And the fear that you had over the people that caused you just to have total paranoia in your lives. I started to see that kind of stuff, and I saw that it took a sponsor doing step work to arrive at that. And so I started the process of like, okay, I asked one guy to sponsor me, and we did a little bit of work, and then it dawned on me, like, I get to my fourth step, and then I'd be like, yeah, I need to change a sponsor. I don't think my sponsor's going to work out here. I ain't reading no fifth step to, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I did that, let's see. Four times.
Willie said three.
Huh?
Willie said three.
Willie's wrong. Willie doesn't take direction well. Just kidding. Wrong, Willie. And there were some hidden sponsors back in the day. No, I'm just kidding. And what began to happen as I was doing that is I would, I did the steps 1 through 3 a little bit, and with first sponsor, and I got a kind of a bit of a footwork for, well, okay, 1, 2, 3, I can do the waltz, right? And that felt nice, and 4-step just was a nemesis. I didn't see how I could get past that. And I kept making up excuses for why it was somebody else's fault that I couldn't get through that. I even went as far in one case to say, well, you know what, I need to go into intensive, deep grief recovery therapy. That'll take a good 3.5 years. Don't worry. It's kind of like an inventory. That sounds like a good idea. And I came back out of that almost worse than I did when I walked into the rooms. And the men that had sponsored me all the way up offered me nothing but absolute love and acceptance. And they were wonderful to me, very wonderful to me. They never stopped being kind and wonderful to me afterwards, after I would move on to try a different path. And at one point, I remember, I think you're right, Willie.
I know it. And
today I can admit when I'm wrong, but the reason why I thought it was one more is because I went with Jack eventually, and then I moved from Jack, and then I came back to Jack. So That threw me off numbers wise. So, good numbers man over here. And so eventually what happened is I was in the rooms of Al-Anon, and my circumstances were quite interesting to me. I was looking really good at what I, you know, this whole program. I knew how to look like I knew what I was doing. Because I could sure as hell talk about steps 1, 2, and 3 like a master. Because I've done them about four or five times with different people. And so to newcomers, I sure sounded like a person that could take them through the steps. And so I started getting these people saying, "Will you take me through the steps?" And I'd be like, "You sure, I'll be honored," you know. And I'd be like, "Well, what do we do when we get to step 4? I don't know," you know, like stuff like that. And as I did that, I remember bumping into a gentleman in the Thursday night meeting who just struck me as someone I knew I needed to get to know. And so I talked to him, and he says, "Well, why don't we have dinner?" And so we went and had dinner at one of his favorite restaurants. And so I got to know him. He was a little weird. But, you know, that never, like, pushed me out of a relationship before, that's for freaking sure. But I was like, okay, this is a little different, you know. Yeah, this person sure talks a lot, you know. Like, I noticed that same trait. And, but what he had to say was all stuff I needed to hear. And so I asked him to come and speak at a meeting on a Saturday morning in Burbank, and I came to it. And he said to me, "Sure, I'd love to do that." So he came and he spoke. And when he shared, one of the things that he talked about was the thing that just absolutely blew me away. He talked about his dad. And his dad and my dad might as well have been fucking twins. Like, and his mother, he said, you know, was so tough she used to gargle peanut butter. I think that was one of the statements. And I think in their family, I think he shared a story about like guns and somebody breaking in, and mom said, "Should we kill him?" You know, but I was like, yeah, okay, this guy understands my household like totally perfectly, right? And I kind of knew that when he talked about his dad, he talked about the freedom from the bitterness and the rage that he used to have and the hatred that he had and the fear he had. And that all was left over. It was a deep appreciation of the great gifts that he received from his dad and the love he had for his dad. I just busted wide open. I was tired of pretending. And I had a sponsor at the time, but I wasn't calling him. I thought it was, you know, an inconvenience to them. I've learned since it's absolutely not. Call whenever and however long you need to talk. If it's inconvenient, it's a totally divine inconvenience. Bring it on, it's fine. And so what happened was I asked him that day, I says, "Will you sponsor me?" And he says, "Yeah, I'd totally be honored to do that." And he goes, "You know, you've been in the program a little while. What is it that you think you need?" And I says, "Well, I keep getting to that 4-step. I can't seem to finish it. I think I need to just finish that." And he says, "Oh, no. That is not what you need at all." And I was like, "Well, then what do I need?" He goes, "So glad you asked." And he said, "You need a new experience, and you need one quick. You've been doing this thing the hard way a very long time, and if you don't have a new experience very quickly, I'm afraid for you." Because he could tell I was no lightweight, you know, lightly affected, I don't know, blah, blah, blah. I can come in for a few years and, you know, walk out saying, "Oh, I guess I graduate, you know, I'm totally fine. I've always wanted to graduate from Al-Anon, believe me." You know, do I want to be frequenting like church basements on Friday nights instead of dating? No, like, of course not, right? Very divinely inconvenient, isn't that? And so he says, so we're gonna go back to step 1. And I went, "No, come on." And he goes, "Well, don't worry, the way we're gonna do it is gonna be new, and I think you're going to like it. He says, we'll kind of do a little bit of a fourth step for your first step. I'm just going to ask you one question. You'll answer it the best of your ability. You know, how have you been, you know, like, what were the different ways that you tried to control alcoholism? And, well, what was the result of that? And so, well, I realized that basically he's just asking me, how do I get my way in life? That's essentially what it was. And I came up with about 11 things that there were and that I thought were kind of my controlling behaviors. And I thought, wow, you know, master of the fucking universe on step one. I just wrote like the best possible answers ever. I get back to my sponsor and in his infinite wisdom, his response to me is, nice start. Good try, keep going. And I was like, well, what do you mean? I can't think of anything else at all. And he goes, yeah, yeah, more will be revealed. And I'm like, eh, those freaking sayings, you know? And I thought, well, I don't know how to come up with more. And he says, well, give it time and be prayerful about it. And so I thought, okay, all right, here's my prayer. Give me the book, I'm gonna cheat. So I go to the past recovery book and I figure, okay, I'm just gonna look up all the verbs in every sentence and ask myself, did I do the same thing? And when I was done that process, I had a list of 91 different ways that I try to control alcoholism. And all of them make my life worse. And when that happened, something in me snipped and changed. I used to think that I was like super easygoing, easy to deal with, peacemaker, like all kinds of these things that make me into this, like, just sound like a really awesome kind of a guy. And what I learned from that experience was like, yeah, no, but I have 91 different ways of trying to deal with something way more powerful than any human power. And I get handed my ass every time I try any one of those. And a lot of them, I don't even know if I could ever stop them. Like, they're just so ingrained in me. Like, I notice that if I start, like, I notice I'd rather worry than admit I'm powerless over the future. Because, see, I can worry as much as I want about the future. And there's power in that. And I started to see, like, well, I'd rather feel angry than feel powerless, because look at how angry I can get. There's power in that. And then I was like, well, wait a minute, the shame, yeah. I would rather feel ashamed of myself than powerless, because I can beat on myself as much as I want, and there's power in that. And I started seeing, these are all my solutions for dealing with alcoholism. And the anxiety one led me into like a psychiatrist's office who says, yeah, you're probably gonna need to be on those anxiety meds, eh, for life. And I was like, that's what my best efforts brought me to that condition. And so I was thoroughly convinced finally with that new experience, just how much I need a higher power, and I need one now. Like, there's not a day that goes by that I can't have that help. I need that. And that sponsor did for me the most important thing a sponsor can do for their sponsee. And that's to introduce them to themselves and their higher power. We're kind of like agents, really. We're not the ones making recovery happen at all. It's kind of like a doctor, he just kind of cuts but it's the body that does the healing. It's God that does all that stuff. We just, you know, make an introduction. Hey, did you know this about yourself? Well, did you know this about your higher power, though? That his gig, his whole reason for being in your life is to do for you what you can't do for yourself. Whenever you tackle this disease that no human power can beat, all those methods, yeah, just drop them. Because your higher power's job is a pretty awesome one. It's to protect and care for you. And I've had times in my life now where I know I have a higher power protecting me and caring for me. And there's a freedom that comes with feeling protected and cared for. That just lets me be, like Tom talked so well about. As a sponsor, letting people be themselves is something that I didn't always do. I made a lot of mistakes as a sponsor going through those years, and even recently I do them still, you know. We don't give advice. We don't tell people what to do as sponsors. That's not our job. If we're doing that, we are failing in our program responsibility to introduce our sponsees to themselves and to their higher power. Well, let's not get in the middle of that. We don't need to be in the middle of those things. What's ended up happening in my life today is, as I was going through, how much time have I got left? 15? Okay, good. I remember going through and finishing up my fifth step with my sponsor. The one that had given me this experience and helping me understand myself better. And the way that he introduced me to my higher power was probably the most brilliant way I've ever seen step two work. And so with all the guys, this is how I do it. It's very simple. Please write down a list of all the people in Al-Anon you've met that you like or that you love. And next to their names, write down the reason why. And so I did that. And since I'd been in Al-Anon a little while, there was a lot of names on that list. And then I wrote down all the reasons, you know, why I love these guys, why I like these guys. And I remember coming to one of the offsites, and there was a dude that came with like an amplifier and a guitar, and he had his head down on the board like these pedals. He had a wah-wah pedal, and I thought, friggin', you know, this guy's no acoustic, eh? He's got his own wah-wah pedal. That's amazing. Like I was thrilled by that because I play guitar. I like playing electric. It's just a fantastic hobby of mine. And that made it onto my list. And when I shared that with my sponsor, he says, yeah, well, no wonder that makes you feel better. Don't you know that your higher power plays a wah-wah pedal? And I was like, what? Isn't that some, you know, dude up on a cloud somewhere? And he goes, no, who do you think inspired the guy that built the first fucking wah-wah pedal? And I was like, wow. Oh, I'd never even thought of that. That my higher power's sole job, right, is to care and protect us. And the care part means to live a full and abundant and joyful life. And so he's created things like documentarians who like put stuff up on Netflix so I can learn on lots of different cool subjects. Have fun with that. Because you can't always do inventories, eh? It'll kill you. And it's like, and I started to notice things like, you know, when I'd go out into nature and I'd see really beautiful mountains. I'd see all those things, and I started to get into, like, how long did it take to create those mountains? And in some cases, like, millions and millions of years. And my sponsor says, yeah. So your higher power was thinking about you, man, millions and millions of years ago, and saying, I know all my creations. I know when they'll come. This mountain will look nice. There's a kid named Eric with K who's going to need to see this in order to be restored to some sanity. I'm going to build it for him, and guess what? It'll benefit a whole lot of other people as well. And so my higher power's on the business, on the job, has been on the job for a really, really long time. And the cool thing about that introduction was, you see, like, I'm paranoid and I hate everybody, right? Because they're all potentially could hurt me. So I was thinking, okay, I can't trust or talk to anybody ever again. The people are the source of all my pain, so let's just cut them out. And doing step two like that showed me that people possessed all of the traits that my higher power have. It restored all this like faith in the possibility of how amazing people can be. And that shifted in step two. And when I was done with that list, he was like, good job, good job. This is amazing. This is great. See, now you actually also have all your list of assets. So we're done that part of your inventory here. Good job. And I was like, I have all this stuff. Are you kidding me? And he said, if you spot it, you got it. And I never heard it used in that context until that moment. I only ever heard it in the context of, well, there goes an asshole. Well, hey, if you spot it, you got it. You know, like, Jesus. And so that had built me up. And then he says, okay, so now that you understand this God of your understanding, you know, when I hear people say, oh, yeah, yeah, the God of my non-understanding, I'm like, oh, please, get an understanding. You need one. You know, like, oh, well, I just need to know it's, you know, not me, right? Like, that's all I need to know. And I hear people say it, and I go, I tried living with a higher power that I thought was just not me for like 6 years, and I almost died in these rooms of Al-Anon. I had to be properly introduced to all the characteristics of my higher power, the ones, all the ones that win me over. You know, one of the traits in there was that my higher power was a gentle giant. Like, you've been around somebody that's just powerful. But you know, they just wouldn't hurt you ever. To me, it was like I saw plenty of you guys like that. Powerful, but safe. And I was like, yeah, gentle giant, that's what my higher power needs to be. Because my problems aren't small, man, they're giant. You know? And so he brought me in, and then I'm introduced to this higher power, and we get through this fourth step. I finish it finally. And I'm given my fifth step, and that sponsor's talking too much. Way too much. I'm like, whose friggin' fifth step is this? This is what I'm thinking, you know? And at one point I said to him, hey, like, how can we kind of like speed up this process, take too long? And he goes, just read what's on your book page then. And I was like, well, I'm gonna slow him down at all. Like, and that's what the real problem I thought was. And you know what I realized after that experience was done? There's nothing new for me in my four-step writing at all. It's stuff I know. It's not stuff that makes me recover. It's just all the stuff I think is me. And it's not really actually who I am. It's who I am if you push me into a corner and give me no other options but to fight for my life. So it's not really a representation of me. It's just survival error. And he says to me, he goes, well, remember when I told you need a new experience? Well, that means you need to listen to the response that I give you to your share so that you can hear something new, because you desperately need some new stuff going through your ears, Eric. Because that old way of thinking and working through life ain't working for you, is it? And I was like, okay. So for me, the fifth step is largely, it's not so much a spilling your guts and like being free of all kinds of things. It's mostly of like, for me, it was an incredible exercise in open-mindedness and allowing my sponsor to like share with me how he saw the same stuff that I was talking about, so that I could see myself better. And that man changed my life forever. And then he left Al-Anon for good. And I went for a long while very confused, because this man transformed my life, I thought. But the greatest gift that he gave me was the last gift that he gave me. And that was of his imperfection, imperfect human example. See, because my life is riddled with example after example after example of how I tried to turn people into my higher power. And this guy would have qualified very well as somebody that I could have thought was genius enough, loving enough, wise enough to easily fit into that category. And I'm not saying I'm glad that he's not in Al-Anon anymore. I really hope that he comes back. Yes. Isn't a man in Al-Anon who I love more than him. He was able to reach inside of a kid like me and show me who I really am. He said things to me like, Eric, you got to know something about you, man. You got to understand that you're not a big fat freaking loser like you think you are. Quite the opposite. You're a Porsche. You're a high performance vehicle, baby. But with all high performance vehicles comes a high maintenance. And if you don't do the maintenance and you let that linger for too long, you'll start feeling like a beat up fucking Volkswagen. Sorry for the Germans. And it says, so don't lie to yourself and believe any of this stuff that the disease has taught you. You know, the fact that you failed to be able to cure or fix the alcoholic condition, either in yourself or in your family, is not a sign of your failure personally as a person. You're just a human being. Everyone would fail at that, with no exceptions. So I love how one of the guys said, you know, that being powerless is not a defect of character. It's very true. It's just a fact of life. And so I started to see myself in a light that was so different than anything I'd ever done. And I found that the gift that the last gift that he gave me was just him being himself and failing me. Because what that did was it forced me into the loving arms of my actual higher power, which he had done many, many, many times with me. You know, he kept reintroducing me to that higher power. And I think that's the most loving thing that a sponsor can do. And to reveal to them, to their sponsee, who they really are. Because they can't see it. You can be that mirror. And so I went a few months without having a sponsor. I don't recommend that. Because, you know, my spiritual condition is, requires that I constantly maintain my well-being. And thank God I had sponsees like Tom at that time, because I was thinking of leaving too, because I thought, well, you know, maybe this is what you do when you get, maybe it doesn't get any better than this, you know, time to go. But I couldn't leave because I loved my sponsees. I couldn't put them through that. And a few months went by and I called up Jack and I said, look, Jack, you know, this is what happened and I don't know what to do. I'm not in a good place. I'm in a bad place. I need help, and I need it fast. And so we talked a bit, and then and he said, when I said to him, will you sponsor me again? He said, I'd be honored to. And I says, well, I just feel so ashamed. Like I'm an idiot for leaving you in the first place. I just feel like a total moron. I don't know how to live that down. And his answer to me was, well, I'll tell you what, I'll give you the same deal I gave you the last time. I'll be your sponsor as long as it works for you. And I said, well, okay. And I cried a lot because I was blown away by that level of love. I've never experienced that kind of no ego kind of love quite at that level. And I said to him, well, what about this whole sponsorship deal? And we got talking about it. And I says, I got a lot of people that I'm sponsoring that are relying on me to be there for them. And how do you do it? You got so many. And he says, well, when do you sponsor people? And I said, well, sponsor them when they ask me, I guess. You know, then I'm their sponsor, right? And he goes, no. You actually only sponsor somebody when they come over and do step work with you or when they give you a call for a program moment. The rest of the time, you're just walking on the same road of happy destiny with them. You're just a friend. And as I started thinking about that, like, the number of sponsees didn't bother me anymore because I thought, oh, okay. Well, God's just going to put in front of me whatever it is he wants me to do next. And I'll trust in that higher power that I was introduced to so well. And then he calls me one night and he says, hey, Eric, do you have a passport? I'm like, a passport? He goes, yeah, an American one, preferably. And I said, well, I think it's, yeah, I got one, but I think it's, you know, it ends in December or something. He goes, go get it renewed. And I was like, why? He goes, you're going to need it. You should get the thick one, too, you know, the one with the extra pages. And I was like, why? That's weird. And he goes, well, you might be doing a little bit of flying is all I'm trying to tell you. And I go, why are you telling me I'm going to do a bunch of flying? Like, what are you talking about? And he goes, well, there's some people in Saskatoon that want to hear what you got to say. Some people that I've met, and I think they need to hear what you got. And you got to know, like, I don't seek these things out. Sometimes I secretly enjoy speaking a little, but it's like not the winding up or the winding down part. That part is dreaded. It's so hard to do that. There's the talk you thought you'd give. There's the talk you give. And then there's the talk you wish you gave. And all of the crazy spinning in your head that happens for a week after. And it's no fun, you know. And so I've turned to Jack now to just get some help practicing a program with that dilemma. So I don't have to take that personal. And it turns out, you know, this sponsor of mine that I turned back to, he reminded me of a couple things. He goes, don't worry about this whole, like, if I sponsor you for another step and then you're gone, I don't care. Because all sponsors are temporary sponsors anyway. And I thought about how wise that is, because, like, how many of you have gotten stuck on trying to get the perfect sponsor for life? Right? It's like the perfect boyfriend, girlfriend for life. Like, it's a never-ending dilemma to try and figure that one out. But if it's a temporary sponsor, it's a lot easier. And some, you know, and he said, he goes, yeah, no, there's something I see in you. And he goes, so yeah, just get that ready. And so I have this sponsor that obviously thinks I'm much bigger than I feel that I am. And I have to have someone like that in my life because I'm constantly thinking less of myself, you know. On the way up, we had some great conversations about that in the car, and I learned a lot about the importance of humility. You know, if you're feeling like a beat-up Chev, let's say, just to make it easier on those Germans that maybe felt hard done by, if you're feeling like just a beat-up person, nothing going on, but you're really a Porsche, then you desperately need someone to be there to give you a mirror that shows you who you really are, and then to show you the maintenance steps to bring you back up to spec. To show you how God made you to actually work, you know? And with, what was the other thing I wanted to say about sponsorship? Oh yeah, I wanted to say this, and I guess I'll just end with this. Besides like the absolute joy it is to have a front row seat to miracle after miracle after miracle, which sure as hell beats the tar out of having a front row seat to pain, misery, and death. One of the funniest experiences that I've ever had with sponsee was with Tom. We were finishing up his sex inventory in his fifth step, and we finished up the last question, and I was ready to just go ahead and move forward right into the next section, and he says, well, hold on a second, just one second. He says, now that my sex inventory is over, do you mind if I have a little cigarette? And I almost fell off the couch laughing my ass off because, like, we're all men that have sex problems. I mean, we'd hardly be human if we didn't. And to finish an inventory on sexuality and be able to joke like that tells you the kind of miracles that a guy like me has been absolutely privileged to witness in a man like you. Courage, courage, courage. And if you're wondering how you get through that four step, I'll tell you how I got through mine. One of those sponsees that had pulled me in before I got mine done finished his fourth step first. And my higher power used my ego, I ain't letting that happen, to get me to finish something that I couldn't do in 6 or 7 years, and it just happened like that. So my higher power is not beyond using my character defects for my own good. And that's all she wrote. Thanks, guys, for the show.